This Spotlight episode of the Boss Rush Podcast is brought to you by, well, you. If you want to support the Boss Rush Network and our family of podcasts, head on over to our Patreon at patreon.com/BossRushNetwork. Thanks for your continued support. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Boss Rush Spotlight Podcast, a podcast where we highlight some of our favorite creators, developers, and industry veterans. I am your host, Corey Derrigan. Alongside me is the regular crew, starting with the mad pharmacist herself, Stephanie Klimov.
Hey, happy to be here. Very excited. This is two spotlights in 1 week for me.
I know. You and our other co-host, PK Power, Pat Klein, also here. Interviewed you guys, Toge, earlier.
Toge. Okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Toge Productions over in Indonesia. And that was that's a very interesting take, the whole South Asian game market and how it's like really expanded in the last few years. So, but we're not talking about them.
Nope.
Not tonight.
To be fair, though, great interview. I listened to it while I was editing it, and it was awesome. So, good job, guys.
Thank you.
Also here, usually third, but never last. Wearing sleeves tonight. PC Muscle Race, LaRon Dawkins.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, LaRon.
Hey, Corey.
You're looking white good tonight, LaRon.
Yeah, white and green look good on you, LaRon.
Oh, thank you.
Even though your shirt says America and it's green. But it's fine.
America. Oh, now it says America.
Oh.
Before it just said America.
America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like a true American.
America.
Guys, we have
how's everybody doing tonight?
Oh man, great. Doing great. This is my fifth podcast today, so
look, man, you don't have to gloat.
This is my first one actually speaking, but fifth overall, but it's okay. It's going to be a fun night because we have some very special guests here, but before we introduce our guests, just real quick, we are going to PAX. This is going up the week of PAX, so if you're there, come say hi to us. We'll be there, and a lot of us will be there, so come say hi, join us. We'll also, let's see here, Patreon, you can go there. Silver tier patrons can ask questions for these here interviews, which is great because we have a couple. And check out all of our content on our website and our YouTube channel, youtube.com/BossRushNetwork and BossRush.net. Not the super long rigmarole that we usually have because I want to talk to these special guests here. First off, they're from WayForward. Okay, third visit from WayForward here. We are big fans of WayForward here at Boss Rush, and joining us again is the head of biz dev and one of the game directors, Adam Tierney. Hello, Adam. Welcome back. Good to see you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's so great to be back.
Yeah, this is awesome. I love having you guys here. I've become a, let's say, from a fan of some of your work to a WayForward cheerleader over the last year and a half that we've been kind of doing this off and on. So I'm glad you're here. We also have the director of the recently released Contra Operation Galuga. Tom Hewlett is here. Welcome to the show, Tom.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Tom, since you're the new one here, out of all of us, tell us a little bit about yourself and kind of your game history and WayForward history.
Sure. I've been in the industry since I was 12. I started off testing games for Virgin, and then I went indie before that was a thing, and then I worked at Atlas for a little bit and did some localization. Then I jumped to Konami, and then I met WayForward, and so I decided to be a director at WayForward, and that's where I've been for the last decade or so.
And we kind of jumped over it. We collaborated a couple times before you came to WayForward.
Before I came, I worked at Contra 4 is a game that might, we might discuss a little bit today. I worked on that at Konami with WayForward. And then I did some Silent Hill games, including the much beloved Vita Silent Hill Book of Memories, which Adam directed. So that was my, I mean, me and Adam met during Contra, but our most direct partnership was on Book of Memories. Yep. And then shortly after that, I came over to WayForward.
Awesome. Konami is beloved here as well. A lot of Castlevania and Silent Hill fans here. So.
And Suikoden and Mystical Ninja and
Rocket Knight.
They worked on the Rocket Knight games back.
Rocket Knight Adventures? Did you do Rocket Knight Adventures?
Or I did. I did the Rocket Knight 2010.
Oh, the Xbox Live game.
Yep. Keeping it alive. Keeping it alive.
Love it. I love it. So Rocket Knight Adventures. I didn't know anybody else knew about that game when I was younger. I had Sonic games. I had Ninja Turtles and Rocket Knight Adventure on my Sega Genesis, and I played a lot of Rocket Knight. I was like, man, this is never going to come back. I don't even know if this is anything. It's like if Arrow the Acrobat came back, and it was like, oh, okay. And then when that got announced, I was really excited. And now Limited Run is doing the entire series, which I didn't even know there was more than one game. So now I don't know what I'm going to do with myself. I think I'm the most excited person on the planet for that.
Yeah, I was pretty excited too. I was like, oh my gosh, we can play them on like modern stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's funny. There's a certain amount of games where WayForward and Limited Run will collaborate and say, oh, let's go after this license or let's do this sort of a thing. And then there's stuff that we are just completely surprised by, and we hear about it the same day that it's released, like Rocket Knight and stuff like that. But so much of what they do aligns with the games that we love. I think the sensibilities and what drives Limited Run and WayForward are so tightly connected, which is why we love working with those guys so much.
Well, yeah. Since you guys are buddy-buddy with the old friends Konami, want to get that Mystical Ninja coming back again?
I've brought it up so many times. I mean, when I worked there, since I've been at WayForward, you know, with Konami on Contra, Operation Galuga, like I'm the Mystical Ninja guy.
Yeah,
I love
that. You guys do amazing with Mystical Ninja. You guys have that camaraderie with your like dialogue that you could just translate that and make it super hilarious.
Look, mm-hmm. Pat, they made an awesome mummy game. Okay, I think they can probably handle Mystical Ninja.
Work with me here. He comes west. Mm-hmm. Mystical Ninja in the west. You get him in the mech. He's fighting Paul Bunyan. Like, let's go. Like cross the folklore. Let's do it.
As long as there's an intro song before that fight.
Yep. Everyone contact your Konami representative.
Do we know who that is? Or hello? Konami? Mr. Konami. All right.
I don't think we have that much pool. I really
sure
don't.
We do. Not with that attitude, LeBron. Just gotta believe.
Okay. They don't listen to their fan base. If they listen to their fan base, we wouldn't have some of those nice hits, you know, in the Metal Gear Solid series.
Hey man, Metal Gear Survive is a winner. Okay. So you guys are here. Konami, obviously, big part of this discussion. Contra. Obviously, you guys mentioned Contra 4, which is an amazing DS game. DS and 3DS libraries are just kind of like one library to me at this point. I never remember which is which, but Contra 4, I remember playing it, and that was actually my first Contra game, if I'm going to be honest here. It was awesome. I loved it to the point where I ended up going back to the older ones, and I'm like, Contra 4 is modern. I'll play that. How did that collaboration come together? I mean, you guys said you kind of began your, I guess, working relationship with Contra. How did that work?
Yeah, so it actually started on the Konami side. Me and my co-producer on Contra 4, Simon Lai, we each pitched Contra games. We had a pitch meeting. We both pitched Contra games. Mine was like a Wii 3D one, and his was basically Contra 4. And they liked it. They assigned me and Simon to the game. They said it's Simon's concept, which was fine. It was better. And then they'd been getting demos from WayForward, including a Silent Hill demo that Adam had worked on. and they said, "Hey, Tom, do you know anything about these WayForward people?" And I'd been a big Shantae fan, so I was like, "Oh my gosh, we're doing a Contra game that's old school, and we're going to work with WayForward. Yes, let's whatever has to happen." So we went down to meet with Matt Bozon and Adam and some other people, and they didn't know why we were there. I mean, they'd sent Silent Hill demo, they'd sent all these other demos, so they didn't know which director to even have meet with us.
Yeah, we actually thought you initially were there for Silent Hill, because we had just done a Silent Hill Nintendo DS demo, which is, you could see it on YouTube, I forget, you know, who's hosted it, and we're like, oh, they're here to keep talking about that, and it was completely other thing, but I mean, everybody at the studio loves Contra, and so we were, you know, happy to get that one for sure.
Nice. So, I mean, have you got, I mean, what is your guys' history with Contra as a whole? I mean, was NES, like, you know, Contra on the NES the game? Like, I mean, obviously the Konami code's iconic, and I remember looking up the Konami code for many reasons. I guess Contra would have been one of them later in life. So, what's your guys' history with Contra?
Adam, what's your history with Contra?
So I grew up, I was lucky enough to live down the street from some friends that I think were pretty wealthy, so they basically owned every NES game. And then also, you remember, like, renting NES games was a big thing back in the day. So we played the hell out of Contra. I remember playing Contra 1, I don't know, probably like 50 hours or something. We were just constantly playing that one. I don't remember playing Super C as much. And I never played the SNES one because I did not have a SNES as a kid, but I did play hardcore quite a bit on Genesis. But for me, the first one, I probably to this day have still played Contra 1 more than any other Contra in the series.
Oh my gosh, you didn't have the Super Nintendo one. Yes. For me, I played Contra 1 and Super C with friends. The first time I played Contra by myself, I didn't actually like it, but I didn't have a buddy to play it with at the time. And then my friend down the street rented it like a month later, and I was like, oh, this makes a lot more sense. But I really got into the Super Nintendo version, Alien Wars, and that was like, I was so impressed by it. It was so action-packed. When I babysat, I would rent it. If the kid could rent the game, I'd be like, you got to play this Contra game. It's two players. Let's do it. So yeah, that's where I was obsessed with. And then once we worked on Contra 4, we got all of them and played all of them, and I mastered every single one of them, so...
I don't think I played Contra 4. I don't think I made it past like the second or third level. Those games are brutal.
I remember when we were developing it, we were doing the challenge stages, and I don't remember if it stayed this hard in the final version, but I remember like beating the challenge stages. Some of them were like almost to the frame. Like you would have to run before the game actually even finished, you know, irising and stuff. And I remember how the first Herbster version of those were pretty crazy. He was our level designer on the game.
And I think those went in right at the end too, like right against the wire. So I don't think we properly, like me and Simon, obviously QA tested them, but I don't think me and Simon played all those like to really see how hard they were until the game was out.
Well, your history with Contra 4 obviously led you into Contra Operation Galuga. Now, can you tell us who actually brought the pitch? Was it you who brought the pitch, or did Konami go, hey, these guys did a good job with 4, let's give them a new idea?
I mean, I think, you know, with a series like that, the publisher is always thinking, what do we do next on that? And so I would imagine that Konami probably had plans for Contra and had been discussing it long before, you know, we connected with them on that. But you know, we had worked with Konami USA quite a bit. Tom worked there previously. But a couple years ago, like 5 years ago or so, around the same kind of time that we were starting to get going on River City Girls with Arc System Works, WayForward got more active in terms of going to Japan at Tokyo Game Show, working directly with the Japanese side of companies. And so as the biz dev person, I started connecting with Konami Japan and talking about possibilities. And yeah, we really just said, like, you know, among the stuff, many stuff we explored, we said, oh, we'd really love to do another Contra game. Especially since they'd kind of gotten more experimental with some of the recent ones. I think, you know, kind of the pitch was like, everybody really loved when we did Contra 4 and it kind of took it back to its roots. We should do something like that again. We should do something that feels like classic Contra, given how kind of experimental the series had been since Contra 4. And they really liked that concept. And so we started talking.
I imagine the pitch went something like this. Imagine Contra, but let's take the bear out.
Oh man,
something like that.
Wow,
something like that. But it's worth saying, when we were talking to them and kind of pitching, like we were all on the same page. Sometimes with the publisher, they're like, what, you know, what could you do that's really different and change it up and like make it different? And you know what Adam said was they really were like, yeah, we need to classic this up. We need to go back to the basics, do something new and interesting, but like it has to feel like the old Contra. We're not going to try to imagine it as something different. So there wasn't a lot of back and forth. It was more like, hey, so we were thinking, WayForward was thinking sort of a classic thing with some new gameplay. And they were like, yep. Mm-hmm. Like what? We're like, well, maybe like these overload things. Would that be cool? Like, yeah, that's great. Perfect. Let's do it. So there wasn't a lot of back and forth. We were all kind of in agreement not to put the polar bear in it.
And that's when you added the dash button. The best new mechanic, yep, in my opinion.
Dashes, double jumps, hovers, it's all there.
Yeah.
Now, was it your intention to actually remake the original, or did that idea kind of develop while you were making this new Contra?
That was from Konami. They'd been so along with them kind of coming to the conclusion that it should be more back to basics gameplay wise, they really saw that like the series had its hardcore fans for sure that love it. They've loved it for years. They show up, but it's not getting new fans as much. And they identified the story has gotten kind of out of control. Like, I don't know how much in the canon you guys are, but like Neo Contra takes place in the year 4444, and like,
geez,
Lance is dead and Bill has been cryogenically frozen. Like, it's nuts. So they were like, let's pull it back. Let's start over. Let's make all the regions have one unified story, because that was another issue with the series. And let's retell the beginning. So they came to us with that, and they had a big story Bible, and they were like, here's the universe we're kind of thinking. Let's figure out how to portray this, do some world building in this classic gameplay style. So that was really important to them, and that's why there's a story.
Tom, remind me real quick, is it common knowledge, is it revealed yet who one of the Rockstar story guys was that they hired for this?
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So Dai Saito, one of the writers of Cowboy Bebop and Wolf's Rain and like tons of classic anime, was one of the guys that helped them put together this new story for the Contra.
Wow.
That's neat.
That's impressive. That's nice.
Cowboy Bebop side scroller confirmed, everybody.
That's a dream one of ours one day.
Oh man. So the art style for this one, like, did you know you're gonna go kind of like the quote-unquote 2.5D, or did you want to do pixel art, or did Konami kind of have some say of which direction you went, or did you just want to do the 2.5D thing?
At this point with WayForward, we've got a lot of different art styles under our belt. We've got pixel with River City, obviously. We previously did a run and gun called Spider Swords, which is sort of hand-drawn animation. And then obviously we do, you know, 2D, 3D. We worked on Bloodstained recently. So it was kind of us coming to Konami going, hey, what do you guys envision for this? We can do all these styles. We could make them all work for Contra for sure. And we did some, you know, different concept art. And Konami really wanted to go with the 3D for a couple reasons. One, we do some technical tricks in the game that would work best in 3D. But also they just wanted people to look at it and not feel it was a retro game for only retro people. So like gameplay wise, we're taking it back to basics, but looking at it, people can't feel like, oh, it's a pixel game. and I don't really play 2D pixel games, so that's for like old school people. They wanted people to go, oh, this is like 3D, it's got good lighting, it's got, you know, these cool VFX, it's got all this stuff, and so maybe I'd be into trying that. If I'm not into running guns already, maybe it feels more modern for me to try. So that's, Konami was pretty like, this is our thinking, so it's a good thing you said you can do 3D. We'd like it to be 3D. So we ran from there.
I'm glad you mentioned all that, because, you know, I've been pretty quiet so far because I'm kind of that black sheep where I've always heard and am familiar with the Contra name and Konami, sure. But based on just timing and age and where I missed out, I never got to play any of the Contra, so I felt really bad. And when I was excited to see it. So would you say Operation Galuga would be a great starting point for those new fans to kind of give it new life?
Yeah, absolutely. Not just for the story reboot, which is obviously an important part of the story reboot factor, but the other directive that Konami gave to me as the director designer was, it has to be a true action-packed Contra experience, so the old school fans aren't sad, because they'd be pretty upset. But it has to be accessible. This has to be like the onboarding point. No one can feel like when they played Contra 4 and it was too hard, and so they put it down. They have to be like, okay, I can play this and succeed and feel good, and I understand why these games are cool, and so like I want to finish it, I want to replay it, I want to really get the meat out of it. So that was our foremost goal in the game balancing. We've got a lot of different settings you can set, perks you can equip to really customize the game to how you can succeed or want to play or want to try it out. And from the responses from the demo and the game so far, like people are really, it really resonates with people. Like expert players are playing it on the super hard modes, no problem. Newer players are playing it with perks and stuff equipped, and they don't feel like they're being judged by the game, which is a important point. So that's really exciting to see everybody kind of understanding the balancing and getting the most out of it.
Yeah, I think,
okay, that's a challenging balance to strike. Go ahead, sorry.
And I was going to say, like, as far as like way forward products, I think this one, to me, it feels like comfort food. It's like, you know, when we were doing internal reviews, because we'll get all the directors together and management, and then Tom will show it off. It's like, hey, what are you working on? Show us a build. And the reaction from all of us was, yeah, that's Contra. Like, that's what we wanted. It feels like Contra. And I was watching the Game Grumps play the game on streaming yesterday. And it's so fun to just watch, because they're, you know, familiar with the old games, and they were calling out like, oh, this boss is going to appear here, or this enemy, or, oh, I want this weapon. They knew basically what it would do before they grab it. So like, if you are at all a Contra fan from the 8 and 16-bit era, there's so much just like comfortable nostalgia to the gameplay and to the systems and all that. You will feel just right at home just picking up a controller and diving in. But like Tom said, you know, this is kind of a refresh. So even if you've never heard of Contra other than it's some classic series, it's a great one to start with too.
Yeah, this was my personal growth moment, because Contra 4 was hard literally because of me. I was getting into arguments with my now boss at WayForward. Like, no, it has to be this way. It has to be this hard. So it was fulfilling to make a game that wasn't, that is still that hard for those people, but like also super welcoming and not that hard for other people.
I will say I appreciate the ability to change difficulties, as well as the ability to get hit more than one time before I die.
Amen. Oh my God. That was such a welcome thing, because I feel like a lot of iterations of Contra was always about that one hit and you're done. Like Because I played Contra, Super Contra, Operation C. I played Alien Wars. And honestly, the Alien Wars is kind of where, like, Contra kind of lost me. I did come back for Hardcore. And then Hardcore Uprising, which I forgot was actually an actual entry in the Contra series. It was one of my favorite games. And yeah, like, all of them had that situation where it was, like, basically you get hit one time. You know, I think... Don't hold me to this, but I believe Hardcore Uprising, you had like armor, but it was essentially like you get hit twice and you're done. So yeah, like, oh my God, like I was really blown away by like just the new feel. Like it's like new skin, new look, new feel, everything. everything from double jumping, because I don't think that was a thing in any of the older games, at least pre 2011.
You could, I think you could buy it in Hardcore Uprising. I think there was a shop.
Yes, you could. That's right. You could, yeah.
Yeah.
There was so much nostalgia there, and I also love like how you guys actually played around with like the change of like going from side scrolling to I forget what they call it when you're running at the screen. I forget what they call that. It was fantastic, and the hoverback stuff. Oh my god!
Thanks so
much. There's so much I could talk about. Like being able to bank weapons. Like, oh my god, yeah, like that right there alone. Like, you know, is a game changer. But it makes it feel modern and stuff like that. And also, like certain weapons having certain upgrades.
I think that's good game design, though, right? Where you can design a game that feels, you know, still difficult for the people who wanted that, right? But then you can change it enough to not make it feel like super difficult for someone, you know, like Stephanie, who's never played the game before, right? And feel like she's gonna have a good time, or someone like me who, you know, I played Contra 4. It was hard. I played it a lot. I have like maybe 10 DS games, and that was one of them. So but then I'm not very good at video games and side-scrolling shooters to that extent. So thank you for adding all that.
Yeah, we were actually really encouraged midway. We were already developing the game, but when Elden Ring came out, and really they did, like, they had things like this, there's spirit ashes, but you can like summon helpers and stuff, and you don't have to use it, but you can, and it helps with bosses. And it really like educated the mainstream about like, oh, this is why people play these. It's not because they make you feel like you suck at it. It's that you can, it gives you this opportunity to work at it and then succeed against a boss and feel that rush. And so seeing so many people try Elden Ring, love Elden Ring, and then start playing Bloodborne and Sekiro and all the harder ones, like, that was like, oh, this is the same philosophy we're trying to have with Contra. So it's good to see it working. It's good to see people open to difficult games. So yeah, that's a cool thing.
Yeah. Plus, if they play it and they feel like, you know, they're really enjoying it, and they can turn the difficulty up, or, you know, I think one of the modes, I think it's the arcade mode, that's four players, and, you know, you can get real crazy with that with your friends. Like, that's a really cool experience, and I'm really glad Wave 4 made another Contra game.
Us too.
Did you take anything from, I mean, I assume you replayed a lot of the early Contra games and probably even Contra 4 to an extent to see what felt like Contra and what doesn't and what needs refreshed. Like, did you take anything away from what you guys did on Contra 4 specifically and say, hey, we don't want to do that again, or this definitely needs to stay in?
The difficulty. Yeah. I had a friend who, you know, all my friends bought Contra 4 back in the day, and my one friend like contacted me really sad, and he was like, I need to return it, because like I can't get anywhere in this game. I can't, it's too hard. And so, like, you know, I kind of carried that with me, and I felt really bad that my friend, who has every reason to like enjoy my game or want to enjoy it, was like so discouraged by it that he had to like come to me and sadly tell me that. It was like, oh my gosh, like my game really hurt you. And so when we did some focus testing for Operation Galuga, and I pulled him in as one of the focus testers because I had to know if we were doing okay. And he said, dude, this is all I've wanted from a run and gun. This is so good. So that was encouraging, and I felt like I'd been forgiven. But that was the big takeaway of anything we do differently is just, we got to make it more accessible. Otherwise, playing all the old games, it was great to just reconnect with sort of the coolest parts of Contra, and we try to encapsulate that. So even though Operation Galuga is a remake of the first game, like plot-wise specifically, I tried to sort of take the 35 plus years of Contra as a series and go, what's like the coolest essence of this, and let's put it in Operation Galuga. So, you know, so newcomers can come in and feel like, oh, this is like why the whole thing is cool, and I'm excited about to see what's next for Contra now.
Now, I have a question. Where can you put the Konami code in this game? Like, I tried at the beginning, it did nothing, but oh, maybe that's because it was there. The demo.
Oh, it's there.
It's there? The code is there?
When you see the flaming sea, you should start putting in some inputs.
Okay.
See what happens. Okay.
Ooh. Ooh.
Heard it here first, everyone.
Yeah. So what is next for Contra? I mean, there's a title.
Hopefully lots of good reviews and people buying it.
Yeah, your hands now. But yeah, hopefully we'd love to keep working with Konami on this. It was great. This was a great project. It was super smooth development wise, and I'd like to keep doing them.
Yeah.
Adam, tell Konami I'd like to keep doing them.
Yeah, I can also say so, because I'm part of like the marketing and the publishing group here. Even though WayForward isn't publishing the game, Konami's publishing it. We've actually been working very hand in hand with them for almost the past year on the marketing plan. And so, you know, been able to do lots of cool promotions and trailers and stuff like that. And we've got some stuff coming up, trade show appearances and you know, some things that we're still hitting some of the coolest marketing beats surrounding the campaign for this. So yeah, definitely, you know, follow Konami and WayForward social media, because, you know, even now that the game is out, we're still going to be promoting it and letting people experience it in some cool ways.
Oh, I'm glad that you mentioned that, because I was wondering, now that, you know, Operation Galuga is out, what is the marketing cycle like for you guys, you know, more so post-launch versus pre-launch?
I mean, yeah, so like leading up to it on the marketing side, it was really just trying to make people aware of it as much as possible. So, you know, heavy focus on the trailer rollout, looking for opportunities. Like we had Nintendo highlighted a couple times in their video showcases. That's fantastic for that audience. Coordinating with Sony, coordinating with Microsoft. Now that it's, and then of course, all building up to the demo, like having a demo come out before release, that is atypical for us, but we love whenever we can do that. So that was all leading up to it. Now that the game is out, it's, you know, focusing on trade shows, focusing on coordinating with, you know, streamers, reviewers, trying to just get everybody to play it and spread the word as much as possible.
Talk about it.
Focus now. Yeah.
I do want to highlight that having a demo has led me to buy so many games that I maybe wouldn't have, in Contra. This game in particular was one of them. So, for me personally, that helps.
Yeah, you and Ed talked about demos a little bit, I think, because of Princess Peach Showtime, because it was your Nintendo PAL block.
Yeah.
So, you know, Adam and Tom, since you mentioned, you know, hit or miss as far as WayForward's decision to, you know, release a demo, what's your thought process on when you generally would provide a demo or not? Does it depend if you're working with someone else?
I'll say, and then Tom, you can chime in. I mean, I think 9 times of 10, we would love to do a demo. The thing that's challenging is the people that are doing the demo are also the people that are finishing the game. And you really have to, we call it like branching within the project. You really have to make it a mini project at a certain point. So, you know, I've done demos for Batman and a couple other games that I've directed, River City Girls. Even just buttoning it up, even saying, okay, well, here's where the demo stops. Here's the screen, here's the, you know, looping back to the beginning, it becomes its own little mini project. So that's why we tend not to do it sometimes, just out of, or most times out of the feasibility. I will say that with some games, you do want to consider like, am I going to let them, you know, kind of scratch that itch? And so that's a consideration. And I think that depends on the game type. Some games where it's like very, very simple and repetitive gameplay, if you give them a demo, they might just play that forever and not feel a need to buy it. I think something like Contra makes sense because, you know, you're able to give them a tease of what's a much larger experience, and they're barely tapping into the systems and barely tapping into, you know, the characters that are appearing and stuff like that. So that made a total sense for that. But yeah, and to answer your question directly, in terms of like aside from the logistics of the production, I think that's usually the main consideration is like, is it going to get people's appetites whetted to where they'll go buy it, or do they just now play the demo forever and we've lost a sale?
Yeah, and kind of to the trick, the cheat, if there's any game developers listening or wannabe game developers listening, when the stars align, you can actually be using like we needed to do a proof of concept for Contra. This is something I learned working on Silent Hill Shattered Memories on the Wii as well from Climax, but we had to do a proof of concept. So, but I planned that out like a demo. And so then when we needed a build to take it to a test audience, we had that level already set aside. And then when we had to use the demo, it had the level set aside. So you have to be developing the game. So obviously that's getting refreshed as like the boss gets a new behavior pattern that has to be going in. It has to be the same boss code, right? So it's getting the updated art, the updated behavior, the updated code. But then when it came time to do a Contra demo, instead of going, okay, what's the structure? How do we build it? What level are we using? What boss are we using? We had this exciting chunk of the game that it was just like, okay, we want to put the perks in it so people can try perks. Which perks do we enable? And then we branched it and tested that and it was done. So when the stars align, if you're planning ahead, being kind of clever, you don't have to start a demo from scratch. You can have it kind of in your back pocket. But it's not always the case, but it's a good trick.
Yeah, I'm also sure as obviously game development gets more technologically advanced and, you know, production changed over the last 10, 15, 20 years, right? Like that kind of thing just doesn't work in most cases either, right? So I think, you know, in some interviews, some larger developers have said, you know, why are games running at 30 frames a second instead of 60 frames a second? Because their development pipeline was built around 30 frames a second, and then they tried to change it through. You know, I think Final Fantasy 16 was one of the major ones that went through that. And I imagine demos are kind of along the same lines in a lot of cases.
Yeah, definitely a huge consideration too is what you mean by demo, because for example, River City Girls, we created a demo and then brought it to Anime Expo that you had to go there to play it. And then we were there standing. And so if it froze, we could unplug it and, you know, change it. Like it's very easy comparatively to do a demo that we're demoing and showcasing and explaining to people how to do it. The much more challenging thing is what we did with Contra, where it's like, okay, here's a demo and now it's going out there and everybody in the world can play it on their own.
Nice.
Those are a lot of factors. Yeah, I have a lot more appreciation for the process now. I agree with Corey. There have been games where I've tried a demo and it drove me to purchase it. And unfortunately, there was a demo that I had tried once that actually made me decide not to buy it. And I hate to say that. I'm never one to put down anyone's efforts. I'm sure everything took a lot of time and effort, but it's what you choose to put in the demo. And like you said, the type of game. So nice.
Yep, exactly.
I do have one more question. I want to ask it before it leaves my mind, but it's, I don't know, it's a hop, skip, and a jump. So since I'm kind of the more newbie to the franchise or to, you know, to Contra, what do you guys, and this is both for you, Adam, Tom, but also my Boss Rush peers who are playing Galuga, who's your character that you play as? Because I know there are, or you can select, right? Because it's multi, yeah. So, sorry, noob question. So do you have a favorite, a main, a preferred character?
I've played all of them to test them. So they're all good. They've all got a cool personality.
Let me answer it differently. So I won't say who's my favorite to play because I think they're all great. I'll just say one of my favorite characters in the Contra lore is Lucia. And we were very excited that we were able to get for the collector's edition of the game, we got Peach Momoko, who's an amazing Japanese artist for Marvel Comics. She did a piece of art for us of Lucia that is just absolute stunner. If you go on Limited Run's website and you look at the pre-orders for Contra, you can see it in the back. It's a poster and it might show up as a game cover at some point, but yeah, that's just getting outside of the playability, just the characters, going back to Contra 4, The Ashley Wood PS2 game, all that stuff. I love the character Lucia, and I love the fact that we got that Peach Momoko art of her.
That's awesome.
I'm going to hop on Limited Run and go find it.
Oh, man. Bill with the blue pants. I like blue, so I pick Bill.
Also playing by Steve Bloom.
Yep, also voiced by Steve Bloom.
That's exciting.
Doesn't
hurt. I see the Lucia artwork. Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah, me and Adam were kind of in over, like, we knew, you know, we've seen her style. We think she'd be cool. We have some cool female characters. She'll draw some of them. It'll look great. And then she turned that in, and we were both like, well, did you see the, oh my God. Like, it's so cool.
And she knocked it out in like a week or two. Like, cause you know, a lot of these things with covers and stuff, you have to coordinate them sometimes up to like half a year in advance. And we're like, here's what we'd like to do. Who do you want to draw? And then it was like a week or two later. She's like, here you go. And it looked great.
It's amazing. Well, Contra is great. I hope it sells well for you. I obviously haven't been tracking sales because it's been out for, what, 2 days at this point? But I hope it does well for you. That WayForward's the ideal team to do this, in my opinion.
Thank you.
So, I mean, you guys are so great at 2D experiences, and obviously you've worked on the franchise before, and like I said, you guys made a mummy game, you know, that was very good. So
do we have some time to talk about your bread and butter?
Shantae? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, whatever you guys want to talk about, as long as Tom and I have an answer. Absolutely.
All right. I want to be respectful of your guys' time too. We have a couple questions from our silver tier patrons for you guys about Shantae. And then I have some, you know, selfish questions, and I'm sure everybody else does about Shantae. Shantae Advance, Risky Revolution, the long-lost Game Boy Advance game, as it's been touted around the internet. How did this come about? Like, I mean, is this a thing that you talked with Limited Run? Because I know they're doing the Game Boy Advance version of this game. Is this just something that you just wanted to do because it's Shantae, and Shantae's, I mean, I think when people think of WayForward, Shantae is definitely a top two character that they think of.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. So I started at WayForward almost 20 years ago. I started as an animator in 2004. And when I came to the company, that's the game they were working on, was Shantae GBA, Shantae Advance. And I think what a lot of people don't realize is Shantae Advance did not become Risky's Revenge or Pirate's Curse or anything else. It was its own game. And so that was one of the cool things about working at WayForward is like, oh, yeah, you've got that cool little, like, I think it was about 1 hour adventure that never came out. And we would always load it up from time to time. And it's also got the multiplayer mode where you're like knocking each other off the fences with like the rotating screen and stuff. But it really was its own thing from the beginning. And I think it was, you know, we're always just looking at interesting stuff to do with Limited Run. Like one of the coolest ones was, you know, because we had such good success with them on River City Girls, being able to port the first game with those two characters from Super Nintendo to modern consoles, never came out in Japan, and we released it as River City Girls Zero. And Limited Run is just down for that kind of stuff. They're great partners on that. So I think we're just looking at all the different stuff we can do with them, and that came up at one point. Matt said, well, you know, we never did that game. We have this game. It's not been pilfered for the other games. Like, the story was never reused. The gameplay there is different from everything else. And then if you look at what Limited Run sells, they've been doing a lot of actual Game Boy carts recently, Game Boy Color, like, releases, and they're pretty well received by fans. And so, yeah, it was basically just Matt saying, and his wife Erin, like, hey, we really wanted to go back to this one, pitching it to Limited Run. WayForward suggested it. Limited Run liked the idea, and then we just started production on it, and now we're wrapping it up. But yeah, it was just something that, it was one of those that's like, oh man, we always want to get back to that. And then I think because of the climate and because of our relationship and the types of physical releases that Limited Run was doing, they also, I think a precursor to that was when they did the cart re-release of Shantae 1, because it's like you're actually getting a version you can play on your old systems, and that sold like crazy. It all culminated in us, you know, reigniting this game and getting it back in production.
That's actually amazing.
Adam, I don't think you know this. When I worked at Atlas and I started talking to Matt, he sent me the ROM of GBA Shantae. So I
played that's cool. Back
then. So that's when I heard about it from the official announcement. I was like, oh wow, okay. But I guess we're doing that now.
Yeah.
Well, this kind of goes with the whole idea of bringing Shantae back. One of our patrons, Christian S., he actually asked, he's super excited. He's already pre-ordered the GBA version, but he wants to know how much of Shantae Advance is the original and how much is new?
That's a good question. So I know that I would have to play a recent version of it. So I can't say with like, you know, authority exactly what got carried over and what didn't. I know that what was done at the time, it wasn't all carried over because some of it was like, oh, we're reusing a piece of art from, you know, one of our other games, or we're reusing a piece of music or something like that. So some of the stuff that was in the original one needed to be redone from scratch for a new production that would be an actual commercial, you know, standalone title. I don't know offhand how much of that demo exists as is in this. I just know it was really a starting point in terms of like the way you're platforming, the mechanics, the way that you're, you know, jumping and swimming and rotating the worlds. Like a lot of the hooks of the current game really were there in that first 1 hour demo.
Neat.
I have to say the pixel art for this game is it might be my favorite looking Shantae game maybe ever. Look, I love Half Genie Hero and Pirate's Curse and, you know, Seven Sirens. I love the hand drawn kind of, you know, heavy color look, but man, there's nothing like the pixel art of this game. It's incredible. Have you thought about going back to this style in any, like, whatever the future of Shantae looks like?
I mean, there's something really nice about being forced into limitations. And that was kind of like a little bit on DS. But, you know, somewhere in the transition from GBA to DS to 3DS, we basically lost most of the limitations. So on GBA, the first couple games I worked on were Sigma Star Saga, X-Men, and then a Justice League Flash game and a couple of Barbie games. And you were really limited on terms of like your animation ability and your palettes and how many sprites you could have and how big your levels could be in terms of the tile art and all that kind of stuff. And then I remember it kind of started to get a little bit less restrictive on DS. And then by the time you're on 3DS, you can kind of, depending on the engine, just draw whatever you want and, you know, color whatever you want. So even when we're doing retro stuff like River City Girls, which is kind of chunky, kind of low color pixel art, we could have unlimited colors. We could have unlimited tile sets. And so I do think that there's like a charm to that, and also the low resolution of the GBA, like being able to fit the characters into that, fit the HUD, fit the world into like such a small resolution. It forces everything to like, you really have to make some very careful choices about every pixel. It's like building a character out of Legos, like changing one block has like, you know, massive knock-on effects in terms of the readability and the animation and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, I will say that like pixel art in general, it is kind of like a numbers game as far as the blocks. If you have a character that is high color, they're going to be twice as long to animate as a low color one. That's part of why River City Girls has lots of flat shade. If you have a character that's twice as tall, they're going to be probably 2 to 4 times as long to animate. So there's something really nice about going back to the GBA style and having that immediacy and just plowing through animations and art very quickly. I don't know how much we would do it stylistically on console as a starting point. But, you know, we're always experimenting. Like if you compare Shantae to Mummy, to River City, you know, any of our recent pixel art games, they all have different styles. They all have, you know, different kind of like ways that we're doing character illustration and animation, even different frame rates and stuff. So, you know, I know Matt's really having the time of his life on this one. So hopefully maybe there will be an opportunity to do more kind of like hyper retro, you know, chunky kind of like classic pixel art rather than more modern pixel art.
That's great.
Another question on this game. Where does this fit in the Shantae timeline?
That's
a good question.
It's like, I imagine because it's advanced, it should technically be game two, but I've had others.
I should know this. You know what? I'll send a message to Chris Hoffman, our head of PR, and I'll chime in with the answer when I get it. Yeah, I feel so embarrassed. I should know that, but I don't know offhand. We'll come back to that one.
Maybe, okay. My bet's on game two. Let's see if I'm right.
Maybe Chris should have stayed in this call. I really like the fact that they're actually making a Game Boy Advance cart. Is Limited Run doing a proper console version or like a Switch version or anything too? Or are they just doing the Limited Run?
Oh yeah,
like
yeah,
the
yeah.
Physical.
We're working with them very hand in hand. And yeah, so all versions of this, you know, development wise, they're being co-developed between WayForward and Limited Run, the same way that the port of the first Shantae was, the same way that we did with River City Girls Zero, the same way that we are right now with Clock Tower. So they're very involved with all of them, both on the publication side and on the development side.
Awesome. I'm very much looking forward to this. I didn't plan on spending this much time on Shantae because I know that's Matt's kind of thing. But Shantae's iconic. The last thing I guess I want to ask is, do you think, how is Shantae kind of relevant still to this day, like to almost 25, 30 years later, 25-ish? Man, I feel old now saying that because Game Boy Color. But
I mean, she's the reason I'm at WayForward. Like, I became a fan because of Craig Harris at IGN running previews of her before it was even, you know, set up for publication. And, you know, also similar WayForward games at the time, like Wendy the Witch and stuff like that. But yeah, I think Matt, who, you know, as Matt Bozon is the creator and director of those games and works with his co-creator is Aaron, his wife. But he's directed all the Shantae games. He's also our company's creative director. So he's working with people like Tom on their games, giving feedback and stuff like that. And Matt really just is an encyclopedia of classic 8 and 16-bit gameplay. He has such a strong fundamental understanding of, you know, what makes a good platformer, what makes a good just game experience, how, you know, everything we're doing on the more recent WayForward games is kind of influenced by what we saw him do early on in terms of storytelling and music and level design and all that kind of stuff. So I think, you know, the fact that she holds up and I think she's relevant because it's very solid fundamentals. Like, Shantae is a really good platformer. Shantae is a really good action game. Shantae has really memorable characters. The art direction is really appealing. It kind of just like checks all the boxes. And maybe even more than that, it's clearly someone's, and a lot of people, but specifically, again, Matt and Aaron, it's clearly their vision for this stuff. And I think that's been the most successful games at WayForward, when you can tell that somebody behind the scenes is just so in love with those characters or that story or that type of gameplay, or even like the gameplay hook or something like that. Like, Tom and I both have worked on lit games at WayForward, like the Creepy Shadow game, and we, you know, enjoy that stuff. There's just this passion that comes through. And I think it's because he's very careful with it. We don't just farm them out. We would never subcontract somebody to make a Shantae game for us. We would never put a bunch of junior people on a Shantae game that still haven't proven their you know, developing abilities. And I think that's probably why it still, you know, stands the test of time, and why she's really kind of been at the face of the company for so long, is just because Matt put such care into each game, and he can't help but come out with a really memorable adventure each time.
That's awesome. I think, you know, after the heavy hitter 2D, like the, you know, quote unquote triple A's like Castlevania or Metroid or 2D Mario's. Like, I think when you get to start getting into this space of games, I think Shantae is easily up there as like, oh, 2D, you know, side scrolling game. Shantae, you know, Shantae, I think would be a top five that you think of immediately, you know? So,
That's awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. It's definitely one of my top five of like the Metroidvanias.
Yeah. I would say, you know, you think of maybe not just Metroidvanias, but just 2D side scrolls in general, like Shantae. I think of stuff like Shovel Knight and, you know, I mean, Shantae is right there. So, love it. All right, so the last thing that, unless anybody have anything else to say about Shantae before we kind of move into the end here, Adam, you're not getting out of here without us asking about River City Girls. What's next for River City Girls? Where's River City Girls 3? I need it.
So what we have said, so I guess a few things. So, we've already said publicly we are working on more River City Girls content right now. Same as before, Bannon, our director of River City, is designing, directing. I'm providing the story. We've got some great stuff going on. One thing I will say for anybody that missed it is the almost a side project that we did that was really cool is we worked with Fangamer on an art book called The Art of River City Girls. It's out of stock right now, but they are going to restock it. If you're a fan of the series, anybody check that out, go to Fangamer and type in River City Girls, because that's almost a project unto itself. It has like every piece of art we've ever done in HD, all the comic pages, stuff like that. That was really cool to put together. We're definitely doing a lot more merchandise. We're very active on that front. We've done some cool fashion with like M. Rage and, you know, lots of fun stuff. The figures that were the Figma style figures that Limited Run sold are now finally shipping out and people are receiving those. So lots of cool stuff in that regard. But yeah, we're not quite ready to announce exactly what we're working on right now. However, I will say that it's a big deal what we're doing right now. So it's not just like, you're not going to like see the next thing that comes out from us on River City and say like, oh, okay, I guess I'll learn who this character is or what this plot is. Like, it's what we're working on right now. People that like River City, people that like these, you know, classic kind of like brands from Arc System Works, it's going to be like a big thing. People are going to get very excited about it, and hopefully we'll be able to share something in the coming months on exactly what we've been up to.
Most importantly, Adam, do I get to run a shop in whatever this new game is?
You're still in there, I think. We cut very few. Man. Yeah,
I'm a shopkeeper in at least River City Girls 1.
Yes,
I run the game shop, so everyone stop by and say hey. But yeah, hopefully I still have a job in the new one.
Yeah, and that's the other thing that's really cool is we love adding new shopkeepers, and so when we most recent thing that we did for River City is we ported it to mobile with Crunchyroll, and then we put their mascot, Crunchyroll Hime, in there as a shopkeeper, worked with the voice actress and everything. So she's in River City now. That's definitely, whenever we do new content, that's something that we do. We add new shopkeepers. We work with new voice actors. We add new cool characters and stuff. So some of that is part of what we're working on right now.
Nice. Asking for a friend, how much money would someone have to give you to be a shopkeeper in River City Girls? Next, we'll call it.
It's easier to be a pixel background character. I know we have a lot of those. A lot of like friends of the company are just kind of standing around in alleyways and stuff. So yeah, let's look into that. Let's see what we can make happen.
Sweet, we could have a boss rush gang like in the alleyway, like, you know, posting boss rush gang signs.
I don't know what our sign is. I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah,
you know,
you're like.
So, River City Girls is great. I know you guys are always working on something that you, because of your pedigree and just the way you work, you're probably working on things that you already want to be working on. I'm gonna pitch you guys some things, okay? So we need a DuckTales 2. It can be the remaster, but you can also make a proper one. I won't say no to that.
Heck yeah!
Wait, do we? I did not appreciate DuckTales.
Yes.
2.
Yep.
I did not like DuckTales 2.
You be quiet, Laron.
Look, I will even.
Hold on. Before y'all jump all over me, like I am like the Donald Duck family is my favorite family in the entire like Disney animated universe and stuff like that. I just feel like DuckTales 2 did not do the overall series justice.
I can
Wade
say
Ford can fix that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean we talked about that. We've talked about a lot of Disney stuff. I know for Tom and me, definitely one of the most natural progressions we would love to see happen is Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers.
Yes.
Is doing a DuckTales style remaster of that game. That's something that is we really want to see happen at some point.
That would be amazing.
What if I would
also take Darkwing Duck?
Yeah, Darkwing's
what
good.
What if it was like DuckTales like 2? And you could swap between the art style, the classic DuckTales, and the more recent DuckTales. You could like choose, and it would change the voice actors. That'd be cool, right?
That the first one you guys did was, it was great. I will also take a switchboard of that if you know.
Thank you.
I don't care if you have to send it to me, and like I'll send you like a $200 envelope, and you can just send me. It's the only one in existence.
Yeah, we've got to port some pretty cool Way Forward games recently. It's usually somewhere about the 10-year mark, and we did we ported Double Dragon Neon. We brought that back. We did Blood Rain Betrayal. That was really cool because we ported it, and then we brought in Laura Bailey and Troy Baker to voice the characters. The original game did not have VO, even though they voiced in the earlier games. So we added some cool stuff. And then what was the third one? Buena's Blob. We ported that to Switch. So it's something that we do. And whenever a publisher's down, we're down for it. So, you know, let Way Forward know, let Capcom know that you guys want DuckTales on modern platforms.
Switching back to DuckTales real quickly. I don't think a lot of people realize the history about the DuckTales remastered. It was the last game that the voice actor for Uncle Scrooge did before he passed away. I think he passed away like 8 months after that, and it was the last acting gig that he did. And that's the classic actor,
correct,
from the actual original cartoon.
It was the last one with Alan Young, and I think it was also the last one with June Foray as Magicka Dispel.
Oh, I didn't know that. I did not know that.
They were both in their like 80s or maybe even 90s when we recorded that with them.
He had one of the coolest voices. Like, she was like the villainous like Joan Rivers, and it was just like one of the coolest voices ever in cartoon and video game history.
Well, now if you wanted to do DuckTales 2, you could get David Tennant.
No, that's true.
Yeah, the new show is fantastic. We love that. Oh.
Yeah, the new show is great. It was great, but also I'm gonna pitch you these other two things. So, a total Mega Man OG reboot.
Sign me up.
Yeah,
I'll sign it right now. Let's do it.
Yeah, I mean I want like the maybe not the NES graphics, but like you know just the Way Forward look on some Mega Man and add that dash move in there. Although I think 11 had it,
Ask Capcom to just like let you borrow the assets for Mega Man 11 and just redo 1, 2, and 3 with that engine.
I mean, yeah, just do them all. Do them all. Why not? I will take that.
We got a slippy slip once
I
we get
past I will
take
original forward. Bad guys as well.
One of the games that we're also really big fans, especially our creative director, he loves Mega Man Legends, so we would love to do something like that. But also, Bozon and all of the directors were big fans of Powered Up on PSP, which sadly only remade the first one. If you took the Powered Up style and made the greatest game, Mega Man 2, that's what I wanted. Mm-hmm. I wanted that to come out. So hopefully somebody will do that someday.
Yeah, that'd be great. The first six games, let's just put them all out there. Also, if you did like an original thing, wasn't Mega Man the series that like had fans ride in different robot?
I was
master.
Send me your top five robot master ideas. I'll get those worked in. Like we'll figure something out.
Awesome. And then on the brawler side, let's get a X-Men arcade game or X-Men '97. you know, that show's coming out and already has a second season. Throwing that out there. You know,
I'm sure the rights to that aren't complicated.
I'm sure they're not.
Nope. We know people. We know people at Disney. We know people at Marvel, at Disney. You know, I would love to see all this stuff happen. Hopefully. I think we would nail it.
Yeah.
I actually do wonder, Adam, this is just brainstorming. Yeah. I wonder if it would be easier to just redo, like, get the Konami, the code from the arcade game, but then redo it with the 97 characters.
Mm.
That, yeah, like, possibly. I wonder if the rights to that would actually be easier than porting that or making a new one.
I will take
interesting
either.
To think about. Yeah.
I always wanted to do a game, and actually the first game I directed was X-Men on GBA. I always wanted to do a game based in Mojo World with like the fake game show and Mojo and Longshot and all that just weirdness. I think that would be really fun.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Corey, I'm really shocked that you didn't recommend this game for Way Forward. The Castle of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse.
Mm.
They would be perfect.
Yeah.
For this.
That is another one. But they.
We got to fit in Donald for LeBron. We got to get Donald in there as a bonus character.
Somebody remade that, though, what, like a decade ago, though, too? I don't care.
I don't remember it. So clearly it wasn't important.
it was okay.
I'll say this. Like, probably every single game that was remade that comes out, we were probably in discussions at some point about the possibility of making it. And then, in addition to that, you would probably be hard pressed to find a retro brand that people love that we don't have a secret internal pitch. Tom's seen them all. So any beloved 8-bit, 16-bit game, there's probably at least like a mock-up image and a pitch deck of how we would update that never happened to be. But we've, you know, I don't know what we do with those. So maybe there's like a you know, timeline where it's like, well, it's been 20 years. Let's, you know, throw some of that out publicly.
I mean, but that's one of the first things we bonded on, Adam, when the Scott Pilgrim game released.
Yes.
Whatever, however many years that, 15 years ago, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Me and Adam were like, okay, we're like, actually, I pitched that. And we had both done Scott Pilgrim pitches aside from the one that actually got made. So him and I are both always thinking about everything.
Man, I would love to see anything like that. So, anybody have anything else before we let these guys go and you know, make some more great games for us to play in the future and now? Well, Tom and Adam, thank you again for joining us. Like I said, Way Forward is always welcome here. You've made me a big fan over the last year and a half or so, and it's always a pleasure talking to you guys. Where can we go to find more about Contra and Way Forward itself? Tom, I guess you can do the Contra part.
The Contra, you can go to any of our main Way Forward channels. Like Adam said, we're kind of part of the PR force. Or you can go to @ContraSoldier on Twitter. I think it's mainly there. And that's the official Konami voice for Contra.
Awesome. Adam, you have anything to add?
I hope everybody loves Operation Galuga. I hope everybody tries it out. Tell your friends, play it with a friend. You know, it's common sense, but it should go without saying, but it, you know, bears repeating. We get to keep making cool remakes of classic brands if people buy them. So the more successful it is in terms of reviews, the more successful it is in terms of sales, that allows us to go back and make all of those cool retro brands. And it also shows places like Konami and Capcom and Sega and all these places that people have an interest in bringing these brands back. So, you know, vote with your dollars. We really are, you know, trying our very best on these games. I'm very impressed with what Tom and crew did on this one. You know, I say that mostly as a fan because I saw it only a couple times as we went and I was always impressed. If you guys love retro games, buy retro games and we'll keep making them.
I will definitely be playing it this weekend. Ed's been bothering me to play multiplayer with him. So, you know, Ed.
Oh my goodness. Corey, can we like put a pin in that and maybe do like multiplayer and record it as like a, it wouldn't be called a let's play, right? If we're just doing a online.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. I mean, I can record it and throw it up on the YouTube channel. People will probably want to see some Contra and, you know, a bunch of people who are bad at Contra play Contra, right? That's fun. That's good content, right?
Yes.
Listen to Ed almost swear.
Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah, Ed's going to be screaming. He's going to be yelling at us.
We need a follow up to our 3-hour Mario Party.
Oh man. Yeah.
And I've got an answer from before. So from Chris Hoffman, head of our PR, Shantae Advanced Risky Revolution is canonically after the first game's events before Risky's Revenge. So it's slots in when it would have come out in terms of the timed events.
That's amazing.
That's great.
Sweet.
And look, I was just going to say, you guys talking about playing, like also me and Adam love seeing people experience our games online. So if any Twitch streamers out there, the devs are watching, we do enjoy it. And it's just great because, you know, it brings back our memories of playing those with our friends and what inspired us to work on them. And then seeing that passed on to the future. So
and it impacts development, like how you guys play Contra, how you guys react to it, what you say you like, what you say you don't like. That goes immediately to people like Tom to influence whether it's a sequel game or whether it's a similar type of game. We always take that stuff in. So, yeah,
I mean, Contra ends with a result screen with your time and your score because of speedrunners. They said games that have a result screen are way more satisfying because you instantly get to see how much better you did. Or so it's there. You can see your stage times. That's because of speedrunners. So
neat.
Well, now that I have
blame when I get that beat.
Well, I can only blame myself.
Only myself.
Well, now that I'm done moving and I have everything set up to do that, we'll do that. Thank you guys again for joining us. Yes. And everybody,
thank you for your time.
Yes, everybody out there, go play Contra Operation Galuga and look forward to Shantae Advance and anything else that is coming out, River City Girls 3. thank you guys so much for watching. Follow us on social media at Boss Rush Network. Check out bossrush.net and subscribe to the YouTube channel. Thank you so much for watching. And until next time, we love you. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.
If you want to see how you can become a Patreon producer, head on over to patreon.com/bossrushnetwork. The Patreon producers for this month are Adriel Munger, Austin Campbell, Celeste Roberts, Christian S., Sana Dierig, Francisco Santillan, Matthew Keel, and Todd Oxtra. Thanks for your continued support of the Boss Rush Network.